Mila just blessed the beat.
Everyone out there, this is Shauna the Songbird.
And this is Shahari with Shauna's Extra Ass doing the most.
Exactly. You know how we do here at Why the Songbird. Don't do that. Here at Why the Songbird Sing. Shahari, what has been up? What's new?
Since then, I'm right now in like a house search. So I'm looking for a house. I've applied for a grant to help me with the down payment. And hopefully I look for the houses tomorrow. Because I see some that have dropped their prices and some who have raised their prices. And I just got to check out the neighborhoods and see how they look on the inside. So adulting is on the way. I feel older.
You sound old.
But yeah, I see myself being here. Oh, that's... No, I don't. You sound old.
Don't do that.
No, but it's true.
That's not in my ministry right now.
But what ministry? The ministry of who?
Mm-mm.
Who are the followers?
Don't do that. Carry on.
So this is a thing. Oh. But yeah, I see myself being here for at least another 3 years. So instead of paying $600-something a month for this tiny apartment, pay less for more. So
right.
That should be a good
that
move.
Sense.
But that is what's going on with me. What about you?
Let's see. As for me, I celebrate my mom's 23rd birthday this past weekend in July. Let's see. It was so much fun. I thoroughly enjoyed seeing her happy and really being with my family again. And just enjoying herself. And, you know, my mom deserves it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, a lot of members of my family are not with the program with pronouns and whatnot. And calling me niece and everything. And so...
Yes, it's probably going to take a while for them, I guess.
See. I was talking to my mom about
that. And maybe they're just rejecting it, you know.
And, you know, some of them I know are trying, and they are just having a hard time. But there are one member of my family, we were drinking and everything, and he didn't realize that I can drink like I can. He forgot who I was raised by. And
like a fish.
So
that was a yes.
I'm not doing this with him. Anyways, we were drinking, and the more he drank, the easier it was for him to say she, and easier for him to say she, her.
That's interesting.
Right. But if he had to repeat himself, if we didn't hear him, he'll turn around and say he. So at that point, it made me think that, you know, you're refusing to say she at this point. And you're forcing yourself to say he. Even though when you look at me, you want to say she. Why don't you just do it? Just go with what's supposed to be.
Well, in him, it might not be what it's supposed to be.
You know what I mean. Why don't you just go with the more respectable way, which is, if not call me she, her, just call me Shauna. Just call me by my name and just call it a good day.
Yeah, he could respect you more and at least refer to you as to what you want to be referred to as.
And it's just not just him. It's other members of family that deal with it as well. And I was just like, I've been officially stating that I was trans and medically transitioning for almost 3 years now. Coming in January, it'll be 3 years. And so I'm just like, you guys have had about to have 3 whole years in a whole section of my life where I came around you and a little bit more femme and just a little bit more, hey girl, how you doing? You know, trying to prep them and really try to bridge them for that situation. And I try to prepare y'all. And it's still a thing. Like, really, this is still really a thing. But, yeah. So that was that. Oh, and then another family member, instead of calling me she, her, she calls me Sean. And so I was, instead of calling me my birth name, which is what I still go by, she turns around and calls me another name in order to respect the feminization of myself. And I was talking to my little cousin who's 16 years old. And I was like, if you can call me by a different name and you can train yourself to call me a different name, you can train yourself to call me a different pronoun.
Okay, yeah, she sounds, maybe there's still, it may take a little longer for the older folks, people to get used to it. You know, they just have to accept that there's an existence of the trans sexes, if I'm saying that right. Probably not.
You know, I've never heard anyone say it like that, but okay, I'm with it.
But yeah, they might just take a little minute longer. I mean, just got to give them some grace if you want them to give you some grace, you know.
Okay.
More grace. Be the bigger
right
person. Be the older person that you naturally are anyway.
Don't do that.
Born in the 19.
Don't do that.
19.
Jesus. Anyway.
But yeah, I'm sorry you had to deal with that, but I'm pretty sure you're over that. You don't dwell too much on that now.
Oh no.
This phase of the transition.
Oh no. It kind of disappoints me because it's one of the reasons why I really kind of don't go back home as often, because I don't want to be anywhere I feel uncomfortable. Because after a while, it makes me uncomfortable. And I even talked to my therapist about it, and they were just like, it's completely understandable for you to feel some type of way when you said, hey, this is, you know, my pronouns, blah, blah, and you have given them this opportunity, you know, multiple opportunities to pull their lives together with getting on the train and or just calling you by your name. So that's where I am. So it's just like, well, I love y'all, but I'm not going to be uncomfortable around you.
That's understandable. So just keep living.
Right. Can't help but to living. Living, loving, and healing. Dear little bird, reclined in the back of a green tank, you hum softly as you feel the warm July sun hug your face. You smile and begin to sing loudly. The thrill is gone. The thrill is gone away. From there, you arrive home and you begin to sing. God has smiled on me. He has set me free. You are and will be constantly filled with a song. So raw, so light, and so felt. Don't become discouraged by those who are unaccustomed to your ways. Sing and lift your voice. Allow it to be your refuge in the midst of the storm. Always remember, your power is within. Forever, Shauna the Songbird.
That was nice. It was shorter than your usual ones. That was short and sweet.
Don't do that.
But it was nice and uplifting, and you had the songs in there. You basically talked about what we were just talking about with your family, weren't you? Kind of, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I wrote that. I kind of was in a moment. Work has been a little busy due to everyone being outside, so all the germs are out, and I was just missing my grandmother at the time, and I was brought back to that memory of sitting, because my grandmother had this green car. I don't know what kind of car it is, but it's like one of those big cars that was still made of metal, like that real metal. Like if you hit something, like, it's not gonna get a scratch.
You could hit a deer and survive.
And right. And it was just always so nice. We'll be listening to blues and we'll go get ice cream and stuff. And it was like a nice, pretty hot day like it was today. And it just made me think that memory. And then after that, I used to sing solos at church. And so it went into that, how I had to like practice that, and with each song, not knowing that I was thinking about how can I make someone feel it, or make someone feel what I'm feeling at the moment. And as I got older, I started using songs and just singing melodies and stuff like that as my own reflection of how I felt in my own therapy. So that's where that whole reflections came from.
Yeah, that works. It's like music therapy. You're kind of using music as a way to express yourself. The words in music, the melodies all come together. A very powerful combination. Yeah. Is there an agreement? Or are you just shaking your head or just looking?
No, I was just agreeing with you. Well, hopefully I can agree with you even more with your moments of life.
So a question for you would be, do you regularly feed your soul? If so, what?
The question is, what are you considering nutrients for the soul?
Well, everything you let in your mind kind of feeds your soul. Your mind is kind of the bridge to your soul.
Okay. Well, then I would say yes.
Yes. You do regularly feed your soul. Okay. What do you feed your soul?
Yes. I regularly feed my soul understanding, acceptance, love, opportunities for growth, opportunities to, oh, that's a part of growth.
All good things.
All those things. I mean, the growth part can be negative because it's also me reflecting on the stuff I've done wrong, but I know that there are lessons in the things I've done wrong, and with those lessons comes growth. So even when something as bad is done, it still can turn around and be a positive thing.
Yeah, you can always turn around for good. So yeah, you know, like the mind is the gateway to your soul. So there's three parts that make you, right? There's the mind, the body, and the soul. That is the spiritual number of completion. You know, like the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, death, burial, resurrection. It's like the spiritual number of completion is the three. So, you know, your mind is gateway to your soul. So you need to start to be aware of what you're feeding your soul. As far as what you watch, what you listen to, who you listen to. Like, is what you listen to, is it anxiety bringing news? Or is it conspiracy theories that don't really align with what the Bible says? So today I just wanted to talk to people about starting a regimen, if you don't already have a regimen, of seeking God and reading the word for yourself. A good way to start, if you haven't already started, would be like the YouVersion Bible app. They have like things that can help you to pray and to get a devotional every day, and also our daily bread. I used that before, and that you can go on their website and look at their devotionals. They have pretty good stuff in there too. So if you haven't, like, if you don't have a regular regimen of seeking God, those are some ways to start. And as you start the regimen, if you started just seeking him once a day, that's fine. And then later on, you'll seek him twice a day, and then three times a day. And then, like, right now, I'm on three times a day, typically, in the morning, in the middle of the day. Like, after I get from work, and right before I go to bed, typically. And then I've also started, like, on Wednesdays, doing my own little Bible study. And then Sunday, I do my little, not when I say little, but I listen to Jolene Whitaker's on YouTube. She's good. She's a prophetess. And I've grown a lot with her over the past month and a half. So just start your own regimen. Start wherever you're at. If you can only take 5 minutes, okay, take 5 minutes. After, as you keep going along, you'll grow more as you keep going. And just stick to those 5 minutes, and then it'll just naturally multiply. But in seeking those things, here are 10 promises that will be fulfilled when you seek him daily. Because in the times that we live in, we need to be prepared for whatever's to come. So these are the things that will happen when you seek him daily. So you seek him and you'll receive rest. The greatest treasure of seeking the Lord is the promise that we find him. And in finding him, we find rest for our weary souls. He is the source of rest because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Matthew 11:28-30. So, you know, when you go throughout the day, like what you're talking about, you had a hard day at work. So you seek him, you receive some rest. You don't know why you're so rested, but it's because he's taken off that burden that you had at work by you seeking him. The second thing, seeking God gives you life. The same God who created life is trustworthy with your life. He came so that you might live abundantly. Seeking God ignites the eternity he placed in heart and sets our mind on eternal things. While the world says seek fulfillment to find life, God's words say in seeking him, you will fulfill your life. For thus says the Lord to the house of Israel, seek me that you may live. Amos 5:4-6. You know, a lot of people get caught up in trying to be fulfilled in activities of getting a better job, moving to a better place, getting that relationship that you want, and then you finally get those things and you still want more because you're seeking those things for the wrong reasons, or it's just not as satisfying as seeking God would be. So that's the second thing. Seeking God gives you life. Those who seek God find strength. It's the third thing. His strength is limitless. When our knees become weak from pressure and our hands tremble with fear, he strengthens and steadies our way. It's in those lowest moments where his strength shines the brightest. Here we mount wings of eagles to soar above the earthly circumstances, to run and not grow weary. Isaiah 40:31. So you get the strength to go through the day. Like whenever I go to work and people are talking trash as they walk past the window that you can see me through, it doesn't bother me as much because I've gotten stronger from those arrows that they shot at me before. So it doesn't bother me like it used to. I don't go home, you know, crying like at one point in time I would have, you know. And the fourth thing, seeking God fills you with joy and gladness. Joy is found in giving the master the keys to your heart. Sitting in the presence of him who is more precious than gold and sweeter than honey. He revives our souls, gives light to our eyes, and overflowing joy to our hearts. With everlasting joy to crown your head, gladness will overtake you, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Isaiah 35:10. Like when I'm at work, and I'll be doing the most tedious thing, and I will be smiling, and I won't, my coworkers will be like, why is he smiling? I don't even know. Like, I'll just be smiling for no reason sometimes. It's just smiling just because I'm alive. It's like, you don't have to have the biggest reason to smile. It's like, y'all need Jesus a little more. But the fifth thing, choosing to seek God leads to deliverance. God has never forsaken those who diligently seek him. Those who trust in him will never be abandoned, Psalms 9:10. He is a fortified tower of safety for all who run to him, Proverbs 18:10. So, you know, some of you may have some spirits that you deal with. It may be anxiety or depression or unforgiveness or contempt. Those things are spirits that do attack your soul throughout the day. So seeking him will help you be delivered from that. You know, like when you don't feel like dealing with somebody and you just hold on to it and he's like, let it go. You don't need that. I'll take care of it. You know, so seeking God leads to deliverance from those things. Discernment. It's the sixth thing. Discernment, understanding, and wisdom comes to those who seek him. As we commit to seeking God first, his wisdom and understanding pour over us with true freedom to follow his plan and purpose for our lives. And the foolishness of God is wiser than all human wisdom. 1 Corinthians 1:25. That one really got me because, like, I've never heard of, like, the foolishness of God is wiser. Mm. Like, the foolishness, okay. From his throne flows the discernment to live every day to the fullest, making the most of every opportunity. Ephesians 5:15-16. Discernment, it helps you figure out who is for you, who is against you, or if someone's coming to you, like, okay, you have this spirit on you that's like, and I don't want it on me, so I'm just gonna move away from you and pray for you from on the side over here, you know. And it just helps you understand what's going on around you as far as the devil's devices that you may not be aware of. That's the sixth thing, discernment and understanding. Seventh, seeking God infuses hope. Time in God's presence renews endurance to run the race ahead, a longing to see his kingdom come, and an expectancy to see him move here on the earth. Because he cares for you, you can cast all your apprehension on him and receive a restored hope for the future. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Those who hope in me will not be disappointed, Isaiah 49:23. You have a reason to live. You have a reason to go through what you go through because you know that you'll eventually be saved from it and you'll live a better life in the end. The eighth thing, those who seek him are rewarded, lacking no good thing. He will make you prosperous by seeking him. Any sacrifice you make in seeking God is rewarded by the one who owns it all, Psalms 24:1. Though it may look different than you expect, Jesus promises no one who leaves earthly things in pursuit of him will fail to receive as much in the present age and the age to come. Mark 10:28-30. The ninth thing, seeking God's kingdom leads to righteousness. Through Christ, we are declared righteous. However, living a virtuous life daily does not come easy. By seeking God, we can walk in the Spirit and not gratify the flesh's desires. We all need to reread this one. By seeking God, we can walk in the Spirit and not gratify the flesh's desires. Galatians 5:16. We become like those with whom we spend time, because apart from him, we cannot produce a righteous life. John 15:5. And the tenth thing, satisfaction is found in seeking God. In a world full of options and the desire for more, it's easy to become discontent with our lives. The steadfast pursuit of seeking God first is the only source of true satisfaction. He satisfies the hungry, longing soul with good things, Psalms 107:9, and promises that all who come to him will not hunger or thirst, John 6:35. In Matthew 13:44, Jesus tells a parable about a field with a hidden treasure. Filled with joy, the man who stumbled upon it sold everything he had to buy the field. His kingdom is a treasure worth shoving everything aside to pursue. Let's chase him like the treasure he is, knowing our hearts will follow, Matthew 6:21, and watch these promises come to life. I got that from Esther's website. So if you wanted to look at that, go to esther.com, I think, and you'll be able to look at more of that stuff. But here's the prayer to end this. But just today, you wanted to focus on seeking God, having a regimen of seeking him regularly. Start where you're at. If it's once a day, 5 minutes, do what you need to do. So those promises, seek him and receive rest. Seeking God gives you life. Those who seek God find strength. Strength for the day, strength for whatever you need. Seeking God fills you with joy and gladness. You're not walking around with a resting bitch face all day long, you know. And choosing to seek God leads to deliverance. Deliverance from whatever you need deliverance from, whether it be spirits, health, corruption, dealing with money. Number 6, discernment, understanding, and wisdom comes to those who seek him. Seeking God infuses hope. Those who seek him are rewarded, lacking no good thing, meaning you will prosper. You will have everything that you need. Seeking God's kingdom leads to righteousness. Satisfaction is found in seeking God. You will have a fulfilling life. So let's pray a prayer for me. Hear you. Holy God, we bow before you, awestruck by who you are. You are light and life, grace and mercy, just and right, and filled with love and power. Let our hearts draw near to you today. We seek you with all our hearts because we know that our desires are found and fulfilled in you. We want to know you, Lord. You desire a relationship, and so we say yes, yes, Lord. Reveal yourself to us today as we seek your face. Without you, our becoming loses its fire, and our doing loses its purpose. Guide our steps and our hearts ever closer to you. Help us to know your voice and respond when you call. In Jesus' name, amen. Yeah. That's just what he told me to talk about this week. Just starting that regimen. Yeah.
As I gather myself, let's go into our business this week. Soul Lux Accessories. We sell everything accessory-wise, including purses, scarves, hats, waist chains, sunglasses, and more. We have the final touches to add to your style so you can have that eye-catching look. Lux your look with the Soul Lux Accessories. Find them on Instagram at the Soul Lux, L-U-X-E. or go to their website, www.thesoulux.com. And that is our business this week. So go check it out, everyone. So tell us, what have you been jamming to in the music, honey?
Oh, a few things. There's this song called Are You Ready by Jason Champion. And I like, it's a gospel song, and it has a little jazz twist to it. So you can check that out and see if you like it. The other one is by PJ Morton and Jasmine Sullivan, Built for Love. That has a nice groove. Yes. And the third thing, you don't have to really add this in here, but it's a Japanese song, and it's called Cheers by Miss Green Apple. But it makes me happy. Yeah, that's the band's name is Miss Green Apple, and it's called Cheers in all caps.
I feel like there's a strip of somewhere called
Miss There Green might Apple. Be. That, of course, that's where you went. That's fine. But though, that's the three things that I've been jamming to, and they fill me.
Are you ready? It's almost time. Oh, he's coming back, y'all, like a thief in the night. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Oh, now it may be morning.
Oh, okay. Now play the next one. I love me some Jasmine Sullivan, as you know from the last time when I was talking about her song.
Yeah, she was so giving tragic. Me all the soul. This wasn't a tragic song, but it was actually a lifting song.
Right.
And it had a lot of soul in it, and I just felt the black love in there. She was talking about paying the rent and bills and still sticking with you, and it's just a nice little story in there.
I know, right? And PJ Morton, I just love his vibe. I know he has like a gospel background.
Yeah, he has a lot of collabs.
Like, he has these moments of like R&B. I like it. It's still wholesome. It's still true. And it's not like how some people feel like they have to like completely go left in order to be appreciated as an artist in another genre outside of gospel.
Yeah.
So I love it. For me, so her name escapes me. I believe her name is Stacey Harvey from Alabama Shakes. Or their name. I think they go by they and them pronouns. I'm so sorry. But they had a song called Stay High. And Childish Gambino turned around and covered it. And I love it. And so here's Stay High, covered by Childish Gambino. So, like, I just love every time he does a cover. It's just, they be so good to me. So, so good to me. And then the next song I like is Your Best Friend. Now, correct me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, but it's just Kiana Lede.
That sounds about right to me.
Featuring Kalani. And this song is pretty much I'll let you guys listen to it first, and then I'll turn around and talk about it. So here's Your Best Friend. And he's almost perfect, and that's why it hurts. And he calls me family, that's what make it worse. Oh, it's wrong, but I make you feel right. You're texting my phone while right beside him. Wish it was anyone besides him. Here's what you meant last night, and you just realized what you felt that night wasn't wrong. Thought about me on your whole car ride. Like, I hate that you ain't your best friend. I hate that you ain't your best friend. No. So I hate that you ain't your best friend. Okay, so I like this song because me personally, I have like interesting relationships or dynamics with men, and I pretty much just like, when I heard this song, I was like, I can see this situation happening to me. And so it's that's right. Right. So I was just like, you know what? As I would hate to like be dating somebody and then turn around and like their best friend, or the best friend treats me better than the person I'm dating. But I can see it, you know. And the whole thing of the song is like, you know, I really hate that this is a thing. So yeah, that's it.
I can definitely see that happening to you, though, to be honest. I can.
And I'm calling
That's a bad thing. So I didn't realize that what the song was about. I was mainly listening to the beat and stuff.
Yeah, like, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, this is cute, this is catchy. And then after I got past that part and actually listened to the lyrics, I was like, oh, this is trouble. This is legit trouble where I stand. So I was like, yeah. And you know, you be the first person I call, be like, what do I do? Please help me, Shari.
Would it be me? Wouldn't it be one of your other Aries friends?
Them two, all of y'all.
I don't know what I would tell you to do in that situation.
Well, first of all, I would probably call you, and you probably won't answer the phone and probably text me exactly hours later.
Especially if it's like 11 o'clock at night, because I'm like, no.
You'll text me hours later saying, what's up? I'll be like,
it won't be hours. It'll be immediate.
Days later. No, it you're lying. Days. Do later. Not lie to these.
Don't
people.
Lie on me. Talking about some days later.
It will be. There have been times where I've texted you and I get a response. It ain't been a no day recent times. Later. Oh my god. It
ain't been no recent all times.
If that's what we're gonna do, if we're gonna lie like this, that's fine. If this is the narrative that you should,
I have gotten better at answering the phone.
And you have, and you have.
But whenever I'm about to go to bed and I'm tired of people and I don't want to answer the phone, I don't want to answer the phone.
Blessed Lord. Hallowed be thy name. Are you prepared to talk about this discussion?
I hope.
Whew. Anyways. So today, we're going to talk about representation of Black Americans or Black people who are within the Black diaspora, and trans and gender nonconforming folks in media. And so what pretty much made me start thinking about that was recently MJ Rodriguez was nominated. She was the first trans woman to be nominated for an Emmy, which is a beautiful thing for her role as Blanca in Pose. And it just made me think about like the movies and the shows that do have trans people or trans people have starred in, well, openly trans or gender nonconforming people have starred in. And one, it makes me realize it's not that many, as we all know. And then two, it kind of is kind of unsettling with the fact that a lot of the people that in like earlier shows, like early 2000s, that were trans or gender nonconforming, they were very stealth and did not actually state or play like a trans character. And I just found that interesting, that was the thing. And then it made me think about Black people. Of my best friend and I, we were talking about how Issa Rae, she just got married, and we were talking about how we love her content because it's not traumatic. And it's easy for us to watch, and it's just good old entertainment, good love stories, good laughs, and it's really not anything too traumatizing as far as, like, people dying and this, that, and the other. Unlike a lot of other shows and movies.
The usual stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just made me just think about, you know, the main times that Black movies are truly like critically acclaimed and whatnot is when we kind of like are sent around the usual or a tale or a story that is sent around Black trauma. And so it just made me like kind of look into some things. So did you know that Sam Lucas was the first Black actor to be cast in a leading role in a mainstream film?
No.
Was in 1914, and it was Uncle Tom's Cabin.
That's the name of the film?
Yes. You don't remember Uncle Tom's Cabin?
When did this movie come out?
1914.
Yeah, I've never watched Uncle Tom's Cabin. I'm sorry.
You ever read the book?
No. I told you, you old.
Wow. As you continue to say my name. Anyway. Anyways. But it was just like, okay, so that's our first major leading role that we got was in Uncle Tom's Cabin. All right, cool. And so the next person I turned around and found out who was the first Black movie star was named Lincoln Perry. And he played a character called Stephen Fitch. And pretty much the character was like everything that was negative of the African-American experience back then in the early 1900s.
And these are all critically acclaimed movies?
Mm-hmm. Like, these are, like, this is what the white people, like, loved and ate up.
Oh.
And
suffering.
Right. And so that's why I'm just like, I'm like, it had, you know, for us to be in the state we are now, it didn't just get this way. And so, like, when I was going through and looking at different articles and whatnot, it pretty much just proved that we've been here. We've been doing this. And this is where it started out. As soon as they started actually putting actual black people on the screens and on stage, this is what it was. Because before, they would have white people in blackface and whatnot. So when black people actually became able to be actors and actresses, they still wanted to see us in these roles of our center around our black trauma or around our black stereotypes. And I so that was with film. And with theater, I found that in the 1800s in New York City, a free black man from the West Indies named William Henry Brown attempted to make a genuine black theater company off the ground. And his company was called African Groove Theater. And it performed Shakespeare plays and launched the career of Ira Aldrich. But it was quickly shut down by the authorities and on charges of boisterous behavior. And so, you know, it was no boisterous behavior. They were doing Shakespeare. Child by. Mm-hmm. The theater later burned down 5 years after it was opened. And during the existence, Brown had to believe to have published the first ever play by a black playwright called The Drama of Keen Shot Away. But no copies of the play are known to exist. So that's the thing. So once again, black history destroyed and erased. Yes, it was another situation that happened that I had read. Oh, by the turn of the century, minstrel shows were like kind of going away. And the middle classes turned to vaudeville. If you remember the vaudeville circuits and whatnot that were the thing, please say yes. Please say you know that, like, the thing between minstrel shows and vaudeville.
I'm gonna say yes.
All right. Ooh. I'm just going to keep talking because...
I looked it up. I looked it up. I see the definition.
All right. So, this is why you made me feel old, because with these movies. Anyways. So, meanwhile, the first Broadway musical to feature an all-black cast premiered in 1898. Composed by Will Maren Cook and librettist Paul Lawrence Dunbar, collaborated on the play known as the Origin of the Cakewalk, and eventually pursued the manager of the Casino Theater's Roof Garden to present it. The play starred the famous performer Ernest Hogan, and it was a hit. And yeah, that happened in 1898 with an all black cast. But yeah, it was just very depressing as I kept like looking through stuff and seeing how much our people really were. They had the world against them, pretty much. If they weren't doing something that was shooking and driving, that made the white people feel superior, then it was just like, why are we watching this?
Oh, they didn't want to see black people prospering in the movies. They just wanted to see the negative trauma.
Right.
Did that like make you think that just made them feel better?
Of course, because when you think about just being human, someone else's pain automatically makes you feel better. No matter how good of a person you are, it makes you feel thankful that you're not in that situation. And I think that really drove, you know, why we got these type of reactions and these type of things towards our productions. That's
as far as the rules that we played.
Exactly.
And even when we tried to make our own stuff, they tore that down, you said?
Mm-hmm. Quickly.
Quickly.
Shut down the company and burned the theater. Baby, they couldn't just shut it down. They had to burn the whole damn theater.
So in your research, you didn't see any other more recent, critically acclaimed films?
I did not look for recent because I feel like the recent ones are typically centered around our black trauma.
Yeah, like, was it 13 Years a Slave? I never watched that, but
I did, and
I didn't want to watch it. I just didn't want it.
Coming from someone who grew up watching, you know, lots of older films and watching lots of documentaries. I mean, I was grown up in the 90s, so the documentaries were, like, made in the 80s and the 70s. Like, I just wasn't with it. I mean, the acting was good, don't get me wrong. Everyone acted their asses off, but another slave movie, like, even when they turned around and did Harriet, like, I love Cynthia Erivo, she did a wonderful job, but it's just like, can we choose other black people? Can we please? Can we choose other black people to make films about? Because anything dealing with slavery, I'm over it. Just saying.
Yeah, like, oh, Get Out is a this popular black movie. Was it a critically acclaimed?
I don't know. I don't know. That's something that you have to go to the Googles for.
Fences
is really good. What you call it? I read the play in grade school, and when I saw the film, they did a wonderful job. That one,
The Pursuit of Happiness, Precious.
All of these are traumatic. Like, all of these are traumatic.
Dreamgirls wasn't traumatic.
Yes, it was. Hidden Figures.
Okay, it was kind of traumatic. Just a little bit. Ever so
crazy. It was fat-phobic. Some nice music it was so many things. Like, yes. These are like just feel-good movies.
Hidden Figures.
Traumatic.
Moonlight.
Traumatic.
It was traumatic. They're all different types of traumatic, though.
Right. But it was still centered around black trauma.
Yeah.
Like, I'm heavy on it. One, heavy. But I can't.
Django.
Child, bye. Child, bye. Quentin Tarantino with his gory ass. Like, child, bye. Get out.
This thing says Girls Trip. Was Girls Trip a critically acclaimed movie?
Was it? I mean, it was good. Don't get me wrong.
I might be looking at the wrong list. Because they got Drumline on here, too. I know that was no
question. You said Drumline? Oh, child, bye. Get out. That's not it.
Menace to Society. This is popular black movies.
That's what that is. That's what that is. It can. I am tickled. But just like that was like that with black movies, I also kind of looked into trans and queer movies as well. And with them, once again, I only came across like a handful of outed trans and queer actors. And I found this interesting because like most of them were like in the teens of the 2000s. So like I think the earliest I saw was like 2015 with Maya Taylor in Tangerine, and she apparently was the first transgender actor to win an award at an annual independent film ceremony. And of course we have like a few trans actors that currently have recent nominations for Emmys and Oscars and whatnot. And so that is still something to be proud of, but it's just still not, it's still not a lot of representation. And then on top of that, before the 2010s, when they actually had trans people play trans characters, they often had trans women played by men, which further just messes up the whole ideology of our existence. And trans men being played by women. And so it's just, it was just a constant, ugh, where's our representation in proper lighting? And then also, a lot of those films were traumatic. They were centered around, like, sex work, AIDS, death, us, quote-unquote, confusing people, or and whatnot, or the idea that with us transitioning to the opposite sex, that we are in turn creating an easier life for ourselves, when that's definitely not the case either. Nothing became easier but my comfortability. That was the only thing.
As far as today, what do you see in the future of film?
I see more better representation and people actually being awakened to the fact that we need to have just regular feel-good films, just like there are white feel-good films that be getting nominated and get all these ratings and this, that, and the other. Why can't we create our own stuff and it be just as effective?
So you see us having more representation of our daily lives instead of just the back-in-the-day trauma, which you see in the future coming?
You said that it lacked the trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even if it like it hits like a small point of it, like I kind of say like a small portion. Like if we think about The Photograph, it was to me the least traumatic black film I've ever seen, and I enjoyed that, and it still was like, yes, this woman died of I think cancer or something. Yes, that is very sad, but it wasn't like, you know, Big Mama got diabetes and got to chop her foot off and everyone comes together and eat the main food that gave her diabetes, or Ray Ray and them outside having fun and they get shot up from the rival gang and stuff like that. you know, it's something just everyday in common. You know, people get sick, people get cancer, blah, blah. And they didn't even show her die and get sick and all of that. Well, child, we don't have to see all that. You can just simply be like, such and such died. It started this. And blah, 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 blah. And it was well written. It was well done. What you call it? I felt good. I wasn't over here like scarred. I wasn't over here in deep thought. I was just like, ooh,
that over was here, a good movie. Over here listening to Mariah
Carey. Right.
Yeah. I guess I need to set my movie game up. I'm not going back to the 1914s, but I guess I need to watch some of these movies if I find the time, but you know.
Yes, as you
but
should.
But you do see more. I think we're getting there as far as getting our feel-good movies. I think there's more to come with
slowly,
each and
other it's slowly.
Black content makers, black writers making their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Even with queer content, it's becoming less traumatic and more just everyday feel-good, kiki, kaka. So, you know.
Can you explain to me what kaka is?
Like a ki is like a party. So a kiki is like a party, a get-together, feel-good moment between individuals. Kaka is just, I don't know, we used to say it back in the day, just mm-hmm. as like a filler word.
In the 1900s?
Don't choose violence.
You said it. I was like, what is a caca?
Oh, no. It now it could. Oh, my God. Anyway. So I'm excited for us to turn around and I'm pretty much just ready to stop talking to you and for us to start talking to our special guests. We have the wonderful my favorite Judy, Miss Ian Phil Stewart. She is an activist and an actress. She just does so much. Like, I feel like I'm not saying all that she does. But she will be here talking to us about being in the film and theater industry and in her POV on representation of blackness and queerness in media. So, hope everyone enjoys that because I'm getting sick of Shahari.
Hi! I'm so excited that today we are able to interview one of my most favorite gals in all the world, Miss Ian Phil Stewart. Hello.
Hey there, Shauna. How you doing, honey?
Oh, child, I'm good. It's hot as hell outside. I can't.
It is warm.
So,
indeed.
So tell us, give us a little intro about, you know, your name, where you're from, you know, a little bit about what you do. I know you have many hats and your face has been everywhere. And if people don't know who you are, they will know who you are by the end of this.
Sounds good. My name is Ian Field Stewart. I use they, them, she, her pronouns. I'm a Black, queer, trans feminine storyteller working at the intersection of theater and activism. I'm also the founder of the Okra Project.
This episode, what we have covered, Black and trans representation in media. On the last one, we did healthcare representation. And I had with two respiratory therapists, which was delightful and always a fun time. And so this time I wanted to cover media and who else to bring on to the show. You have, and not just like, not just in film, you have done stage productions. I love your work in sex play That show definitely had helped me in my former relationship. And just like tell us some other shows that you have done, and give us a little rundown about some of the projects that you have been a part of, because I know it's a lot, and I know you're constantly busy on Triple Leo.
Oh goodness, it is my season. So I have done, as far as New York theater, I've done a lot of off-Broadway work. I've also, in the theater world, done a lot more, like, as far as, like, notable things that people would recognize. I've done a lot of work doing consulting work for theater. So essentially what that looks like is sometimes it's audience development, which basically means, is a fancy way of saying getting Black folks and, like, marginalized folks into the seats, or at least that's the way that I do it. The other aspect of it can also be like examining how these institutions are running their work and doing what they do, and helping them to rethink and reshape how they're doing what they do. And so that's a lot of the work that I've done in the theater. In TV, TV has been very good to me. I've been seen as the one-line bartender on Pose. Yes. And then was a guest star on The Bold Type, which just finished its final season, and it's on the Freeform Network. So if you have not checked out The Bold Type, please do. And season 4, episode, I can't remember the episode. It's called
Marathon. Episode 6 or
something? Something like that.
It's like midway.
You better know my resume better than I do.
Keep up, sis.
Okay. Trying to, girl. That was what I've done with the Freeform Network. And then I went over to Netflix and worked with them on a recurring character in Dash and Lily, which was the number one like holiday Netflix holiday show around the world for a little while, and it was very, very nice. I'm trying to think what else people would want to know about me. In the past year, I've become, obviously, like, you know, theater and TV and film hasn't really been a thing, so I haven't really been able to do like my art, which has been a struggle, but we've made it through. And now kind of the doors are starting to open up again, and as much fear as I have around that, especially with like Delta variants, Lambda variants and everything, it is nice to feel like we can be artists again in one way or the other. I'm trying to think, there was something I was gonna say. In the past year, kind of what people have gotten to know me for is like the Oprah Project and my activism work, and essentially just with a focus on Black trans liberation and making sure that our people are taken care of. And I am one of the co-organizers of the Brooklyn Liberation March, which made history last year as the largest march for Black trans lives that has ever been created, which was amazing. 15,000 people came out and marched for Black trans people. And it was an honor. And yeah, it really was. And we did it again this year. The numbers weren't quite the same, which I think is indicative of the times. You know, onward and upward, and each year will be bigger and better. And if we want that to be, each year will just be better, I think is the focus. But this year we focused on trans youth, and with a special focus on trans youth and like in sports. And so we had a lot of really dope speakers who just killed it, and it was incredible. So that's kind of what people have known me for the last year. And now it's kind of shifting gears again, so they can know me as a writer, director, playwright, actress, all the things that I do.
Yes. And I definitely love that. Also, thank you so much for the work that you do. And whether it is like in the front or in the back, we definitely appreciate it because somebody has to do it no matter what, and the work has to be done no matter who is in charge or who is involved. The work needs to be done, and so
absolutely.
I just want to say thank you for that. I remember because I was it was last year I was working in Brooklyn at the time, and I was working in the COVID unit, and leading up to it, I saw you posting about it, and I was just like, cool, this is like awesome. Like, I love this. And I was like, damn, I work. And when I saw like the turnout, it was, and it happened like down the street from like my hotel. Cause I think I was saying like downtown, like right in front of like the Manhattan Bridge. So like it happened not too far away. So it was just like, I was like, this is amazing. I'm like, I'm honored to know you and to have you as my friend. And the fact that y'all did this for the people, it was just beautiful.
Thanks, I appreciate you.
And then also, you also helped map like my whole thought for episode one of What Songbird Sings, because I think it was shortly after your march. It was like that, and then also a lot of talk about all the legislation around trans youth that really made me go, you know what, this needs to be, you know, the first topic for the podcast, because it was just like,
I love that.
So that's when Shahara and I had some moments talking about trans youth and trans athletes, and I hope it was very enlightening for our audience. But we're gonna move past all of that, all that activism stuff. It's important, uh-huh. Yes, but that's not what we're here for. So theater, producing, mm-hmm. writing, what started this? What are your beginnings as far as like getting into this?
Well, as you know, I am a Southern girl like yourself in Birmingham, Alabama. I started dancing at the age of 4, and so I've pretty much only known a life on the stage and in some form of just storytelling. And so I think, you know, for when I started dancing, I just kept doing it. And then I discovered musical theater, and I was like, oh, okay, so there's this thing that I can do where I dancing and act. Okay, that's cute. And so I started doing that. I went to the Alabama School of Fine Arts, where I studied theater, you know, 3 to 4 hours every day, and then would leave and go to voice lessons and dance lessons. And I was like really on that track. That was kind of my early beginnings. It was just like, I had the vision of being a Broadway baby, and my vision for my future, my dreams and my goals has widely expanded. And it's so much more than I could have ever imagined. I always was dreaming a little too small. When I was younger, and now I can see like there was so much more potential there. So I just feel I feel incredibly grateful for the life that I've had so far, or the career I've had so far, I should say. It's been very good to me, and it's been not without hard work. But you know, when you put in that hard work, sometimes it pays off, and I've been very, very, very blessed to have it pay off.
So for those who are interested in the theater and everything, like what are your recommendations as far as how they should go about doing it? What is your definition of hard work in this industry? What does that entail?
That's a wonderful question. I think that in terms of telling stories and being an actor, there are so many different routes. And I think that so often we're kind of just shoved into one particular mode, which is that, you know, mm-hmm. Which is kind of what I did early on, you know, go to the dance classes, go to the voice lessons, do all the things. Mm-hmm. But what I found when I went to college is that I came in with all of that good work that I had put in, you know, all of that preparation. Mm-hmm. And my identities were still the issue, even though that's like, I'd walked in with them, you know, they didn't go mm-hmm. anywhere, but my identities were still the issue. And so I think that what I've really discovered is that I don't know that there is like one particular route that anyone can take in this industry. And that's such a frustrating question, because we all want to have like the easy answer and the
cookie cutter answer
that kind of, yeah, exactly. That's like, okay, if I do X, Y, and Z, things will be simple and things will move forward. But the reality is that it's just never like that. I think that if you want to take a traditional route in theater and film, the thing to do is to is kind of exactly what they say to do. And I don't know any other way to say that other than like you just have to put in the work. You have to go to the dance lessons, you have to go to the voice lessons, and you have to go to the acting lessons as best as you can. I think that there is a lot of potential for making, I think that like what a lot of people miss in the process is that they spend so much time becoming a good actor, they forget to become a good human. And so I think that that's actually really essential to the work, because our bodies are instrument, our souls, like we are putting, when you go on stage and when you go in front of a camera, if you're really doing it right, at least as far as what I think is right, you know, your soul, your heart, your body, all of it's out there, ready to be consumed, ready to be observed, ready to be judged in many ways. And so I think you have to really get, I had a boss when I worked at Live Theater Experience who became a mentor to me, Toya Lillard, and she always described it as putting the coconut oil on your soul, making sure that, you know, no one can get in. And so I think that that's the most important work of all, period. We all have to make sure that like we are doing everything that we can do to take care of our, you know, our inner self and our inner world, and making sure that that is taken care of before we start to value ourselves by what we are able to accomplish, and more by who we are and how we move through the world. So I think that because there are so many different ways to be successful, and because many of them just happen to be dumb luck or networking, or, you know, making sure that you're in that right room and you're ready to, you're making sure that you're the one who gets to have that opportunity before anybody else. Because there's so much of that. I think that the most important thing that anyone who's wanting to be in media and in entertainment, that they take care of themselves first, and they make sure that they're good, that they are a whole person, because it is very easy to lose yourself in trying to be the right fit for the job.
Okay, so my big thing with the media industry is that you have to have part of you readily available for consumption. And and I've seen you perform, what is the name of that show? When I tell you, yes. And when I tell you, as I was watching you, like I began to have chills, and part of me was so invested in when you were doing a particular monologue. And I feel like for people who really want to be in the industry and really want to stay in the industry, is those moments like that that people want from you. And I wonder from you, like, how easy is it for you to go into that place, or to be able to give the audience a piece of you? And how are you able to reel that back in?
I think the answer to that is preparation and rehearsal. I think I've worked very hard on each role that I take. I work very hard, honestly, sometimes to just like figure out what my process needs to be for that particular show. And so there's kind of all like, I think now where I am in my life, I would probably do even more than what I was doing before and make it even more of a ritual. But I think that like having those rituals and those things that you kind of figure out in rehearsal is just because not every role requires the same thing. If I'm doing a role where I'm playing, you know, someone who's beautiful and that's pretty much it, you know, there isn't the same level of like emotional investment that you have to put into that kind of role. And so I think that it's all about that preparation. It's all about everything that happens right up until, you know, the curtain rises or the lights are on. And that kind of sets the tone for everything. So sometimes for me, that's making sure that I have at least a few moments of quiet and silence to just like think through the show right before I go on, or making sure that when I'm in my place, I'm not kind of talking or gossiping, but rather than I'm like really trying to focus in. Now, I'm not without a good gossip. So sometimes, you know, you just get in the mode and then it's like, all right, well, it's time to kiki, you know? But right. I think overall, it's just all about like, how are you preparing? How are you, and making sure that you make your rehearsals count. I think that's a really big thing too. Mm-hmm. It's just making sure that the time that you're given to practice and grow, that you do throw it all kind of at the wall and see what sticks, and that you make bold choices, and that you make make choices that people wouldn't necessarily expect.
Okay.
And see if that resonates with the story that everyone's trying to tell.
I like that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Right. So as far as representation in media goes, a big discussion that I had with someone was how oftentimes it seems like the shows that are representing Black folks, or even representing like trans and gender nonconforming folks, is centered around trauma. And mm-hmm. those are the ones that are like, that are making the money. Those are ones making the money. To me, I could be wrong. I've yet to fully, you know, dive into the research on it. And I doubt if there is research on it anyways, but how do you feel, and what do you think the possible rationale is as far as why that is the go-to as far as the representation of us in media, instead of, you know, a wonderful, happy-go-lucky, non-traumatic film or show centering around people that are within our circles?
I think that the reason that trauma sells is because that's sort of, in the culture of whiteness, in the culture of white supremacy, that is sort of how people have learned to care, is to learn that, you know, oh, I have to care about this, not because another human being inherently deserves care or attention or love or all of these things, but in a culture of white supremacy, this person must prove to me that they have experienced so much trauma that they need to, that I should care. And I think that often when cis white people are the ones greenlighting projects, they're not able to see the value in Black people who are happy, because they have never known Black people who are happy. They've only known Black people who are traumatized by their own behavior. And by their own behavior, I'm meaning white people's behavior. You know, white people are used to traumatizing Black folks. And so one of the only times that white people see us is in the news, when they are hearing about the trauma they've inflicted on us, if that even happens. I think that one of the only times that cis people see trans people at times, not because they don't have the opportunity to do, but just because that's the one time that they choose to pay attention, is when, you know, someone tells them a sob story, essentially. And it's not to like take away from the artistry of those stories, because I do believe in the value of telling difficult stories. Mm-hmm. I do believe in the value of, you know, letting life as it is be on stage. But I think that often life as it is on stage is, or on film or in TV, is not always reflective of how life really is. It's sort of reflective of, I guess I just always go back to the idea that like, we are literally playing make-believe. Like what I do is just play make-believe in front of an audience, whether that be in front of on a TV screen or whether that be on a stage, I'm just playing make-believe. And so if we have the opportunity to play make-believe, why would we recreate the, like, if we have the opportunity to say how we would like things to be and no one could tell us otherwise, why would we choose violence? Why would we choose murder? Why would we choose harm? Why would we choose hurt? And I think that inherent in that choice is the understanding of what we value, right? If we choose to center on violence, harm, and oppression, it's because we are still interested in harm, violence, and oppression.
Mm.
And so I think that
Go back and say that again. Rewind. The people in the back didn't hear you.
I said, I think that if we choose harm, violence, and depression, it is because we care about harm, violence, and depression. I don't think that's exactly how I said it. But yeah, I mean, that it's just, that is the thing that we value. That's the thing that we care about. Our choice reflects our values. And if we choose to portray Black people as insert whatever, however you see Black people being portrayed here, you know, but if that is how we portray Black people, because that is how we as a society value Black people, that is our inherent value. If we portray trans people as however you believe that we portray trans people, it's because that's how we value trans people. And we need to be honest about that, because often we are attempting to teach and educate people who are not interested in being taught or educated. And I frankly feel that's a waste of time. Black trans people in particular are literal divinity on earth. And if you as a cis person, if you as a Black person, if you as a cis Black person, or whomever, if you can't see us, that's your loss. We're still here and we're still fabulous and we're still over, darling. So, you know, the girls are either gonna get it or they're not. And I think we've reached a point now where there's enough 101 that if you're not ready to move on to 202 or 303 or 404, then girl, you're gonna get left behind. But the moment is here.
I love it.
Thank you.
You bet. Child, you're letting me throw my shoe at you. Throw my whole shoe at you. And I love your wording and everything, because it's essentially what I told my homegirl. And also, it's a word. Shahari, you have any input?
I got a lot of input from the thing, from the discussion. So I'm just processing all of the words. You did say, as far as getting into the playwright stuff, the process, you started out doing what people think that you should do, and then it branched off into, what did it branch off into again?
Essentially, so I went to a college, a predominantly white institution, in the middle of Illinois, and I started, you know, getting my Bachelor of Fine Arts in musical theater. And by the end of my sophomore year, I kind of looked up and I just realized, these people have absolutely no idea what to do with me. I am never going to be, like, they're trying to cast me as an ensemble member and I'm a star. And I knew that. And I was like, if you continue to cast me this way, this is going to be a waste of my time. And so I went back to Birmingham and I was feeling pretty dejected, but it's kind of always been the case that whenever I really needed to like recenter myself, I go back to Birmingham and I go back,
home.
And I will, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I go back to my roots, because it's like, that's, you have to go back to the source. And so when I went back home, that was when a local activist sort of like picked me up and brought me along. And it was the first time I encountered activism. And I come from the school of thought that if you can do anything besides theater, do it, because it's such a tough business. Yeah, sure enough, you know, I found something else that I could do and be happy doing. And I was absolutely horrified because I was just like, this is, you know, I had prepared my whole life for this, you know, like as long as I'd been alive, I pretty much, all of my memories are that I was like, yep, I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to be an actress. And that was what I fought for. And so to suddenly arrive at the idea that, oh, maybe I need to like shift how I'm thinking about that was really frightening. So when I went back to school, I started to incorporate, I basically started to focus on like my general education courses. And I, instead of just kind of taking courses that just for the heck of taking them, I took courses that actively were about, you know, marginalized groups of people, that were focused on gender issues, that were focused on race issues, that were focused on learning about all of these things and learning how to not only understand them, but identify them and be an advocate as well as like, you know, just understand how I myself was being affected by these various systems that existed. And so doing that work and then kind of bringing all that with me, I suddenly realized it's like, oh, actually my storytelling doesn't have to be determined by someone else. I can determine what my story will be, and I can determine what stories I want to tell, and I'm invested in telling. And so then when I went to New York, I just brought all of that with me. And so I think what it really, I'm still incredibly hardworking. I'm still very ambitious because I never had small ambitions. But I am much more focused on making sure that my ambitions are always in alignment with my values, which I think before, when I was younger, I didn't necessarily feel like I had to fit into anything or do anything in particular. I just was like, oh, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an actress. And I focused so much on my career that I kind of forgot myself in the process. And so I think the past, you know, oh goodness, however long it's been since I've been out of college.
don't remind us.
I'm not going to give away anything. But, you know, however long it's been, it just gave me the time to sort of figure out who I was and what was important to me. And what it turns out that what's important to me is to tell a good story. And it also turns out that to me, a good story is only as good as like the community that surrounds it and the community that it brings to it.
That's powerful.
Thank you, love. Appreciate it. You like to think you do something right every now and then.
Okay, you're feeling the spirit over there.
I know, right? This thing is vibrating over there.
She said vibrating.
I'm not going to comment on that one. But yes, I definitely felt all of what you just said. Yes.
I think I'm filled.
Oh, filled, yes. I like that.
Ooh, we stand a good feeling, child. We stand.
Oh my God. I don't know where you're at. I don't know where your head just went, but
wait.
You're gonna pray over it.
I wasn't meaning that. My God. Now y'all are filthy.
I mean hot kettle black. Man. Don't forget, these girls didn't know you back then. I've known you since you was back in the day, so don't play with me.
We both know.
Miss Round the Way. Don't play with me.
I went and just had a thing in the woods.
Wait.
Expose her.
You shouldn't have brought this home.
I'm a good person. Please.
We all good people.
I paid my taxes. Don't talk about me. Anyways. I feel like you gave us some wonderful things to reflect on, some beautiful points. And I don't want to hold too much of your time.
I'm just at home. As soon as I get done with this, I'm going to play a little video game and chill out. That's going to be it. Ain't no one special over here, child.
I love it. We're awesome. But before we close, Shahara, do you have any other questions or any other comments to add when it refers to Black folk being represented in media, or the possibility of trans, gender non-conforming folks, or any kind of non-white typical person being represented in media?
That was a long question, but I do not have questions right now. I think we'll let that all congeal in my mind.
Okay. I love this congealing in your mind, honey. I might have to use that. Anyways, but once again, thank you, Missy Ann Field Stewart, for being with us and having this moment, even despite our technical difficulties. Anyways, yeah. And if you guys, you guys will have her show, her social media at the bottom of our description, and you'll be able to hit her up and see what she's been up to. I forgot, you didn't say anything about your webinar, your web series and all those things that you were a part of, award-winning web series.
We're still waiting for that to come out. So hopefully it will. I think that by the pandemic.
No, the new one, the old one that received some award. I forgot what award it was.
Oh, yes. The Fields. Oh, good memory, girl. Yes, I was in The Fields. I was in a couple episodes of this web series called The Fields, which centers on a bisexual man. Essentially, it's a beautiful, basically what they do is each episode they release is like 3 to 5 minutes, and they release every single day for like Pride Month usually, and each story sort of happens within this world that they've created, and it's really lovely. I was very, very honored to perform with Sara Ramirez from Grey's Anatomy, who actually holds the title for it. They hold the title for the longest running queer character on television, 12 seasons, as Callie Torres. And so just quick shout out to Sara, Sara just announced not too long ago that they will be in the new season of, or the new series of Sex and the City. I think it's And After All That or something like this. The name is kind of harder to get, but it's essentially the new Sex and Series 2.0. And Sara will be in that, and I'm very excited to see that final product, and I hold that show very close to my heart. So if you want to check it out, it's The Fields, Ian Field Stewart. If you're trying to follow me on social media, it's just at The Free Actorvist. That's TheFreeActorvist. And I'm barely on Instagram, really. Actually not on Instagram, but you really only see my stories. I don't post very often, but I'm not ready for the girls to be in my business like that yet. So we'll see how I grow and develop over the years. But thank you both so much for having me. This is lovely.
All right, and until next time, bye.
Reflection. 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 Thank you.